Hello, Dale speaking. This is India.
Dale speaking. This is Rue.
Dale speaking. This is Amber.
Ring, ring. Dale speaking.
I almost burped.
Hello, and welcome to Radio Dale number 43, this week in music history. Which rock star played his last show in Toronto?
This week on the charts, Rock Without CanCon.
This week on the campus report, interesting names.
We have a new song by Jess Moskaluk.
And in part two, five things you may not think are important, but really, really are.
It's time for This Week in Music History, and I'm kicking it off while Amber...
I didn't know we were actually starting, sorry.
Yay, it's time for This Week in Music History. I'm going to kick it off with October 17th, 1972, born on this day. M&M's? Oh no, M&M.
One M&M.
U.S. rapper, Marshall Bruce Mathers III.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. In 2000, he had the UK number one single with...
Lose Yourself.
The Real Slim Shady.
Oh, The Real Slim Shady.
And the 2000 worldwide number one album, Marshall Mathers LP. He also did win an Oscar for Lose Yourself.
For 8 Mile.
But he did not accept it.
October 18th, 2007, Amy Winehouse and her husband Blake Fielder Civil were arrested in Bergen, Norway and held overnight for possession of cannabis. I did not know she was married. The singer was released the following morning after a fine of 500 euros.
October 19th, 1985. Went to number one on the U.S. singles chart with Take On Me, making them the first Norwegian group to score a U.S. number one. Fun fact.
October 20th, 1978. The Police made their U.S. debut at...
CBGB's
in New York. The trio had... The trio had flown on low-cost tickets with Laker AirTrain from the UK, carrying their instruments as hand luggage.
It's a big purse, the guitar.
That is a big purse. 1978, so within a year, they were probably one of the biggest bands in the world.
Yeah.
And
I'm sorry.
She hates the Police, so she had to storm out on this one. Makes sense. Anyways, I could pass it to you.
She professed her love for Sting yesterday.
So that's true.
It's kind of ironic that she's leaving now while we're talking about him. October 21st, 1976, Keith Moon played his last show with The Who at the end of a North American tour. Guess where?
Vancouver?
Toronto.
Oh, Toronto, nice.
At Maple Leaf Gardens. On September 7th, 1978, Moon died of an overdose of the sedative hemivirin that has been prescribed to prevent seizures induced by alcohol withdrawal. Heminephrine.
So he overdosed on the stuff he was supposed to take.
Heminephrine. That's how a doctor, I think, would say it.
Heminephrine.
Yeah.
It would be a scribble on a pad.
Right.
So it's the stuff... He overdosed on the stuff that was supposed to help him...
Get off of booze. Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, that's crap.
Also ironic.
Ironic, don't you think?
October 22nd, 1988. U2 scored their fourth. That's right. Fourth.
That's a one.
UK number one.
Amber was holding up one finger to say fourth.
UK number one album with the double set and film soundtrack Rattle and Hum featuring their first UK number one single, Desire.
Hmm.
First UK number one was their... Was Desire. Wow.
But well, the other ones were
That
really
was after
no
With
good,
or Without
so.
You and everything, too. What the hell,
or,
UK?
Or Streets Have No Name was by that point. Yeah, a whole bunch of songs were out.
But
Pride in the Name of Love, I believe, was out, wasn't it?
But the thing that really launched them was Joshua Tree.
Oh, Joshua Tree, that's right.
Which was after Unforgettable Fire. But Rattle and Hum, fun fact... was panned, but the DVD, but the VHS,
the
I guess, or the
really?
When it went into theaters, people looked at it as like U2 was gloating and it was just looked at as tacky and like, you know, what the hell, you guys have made one really successful album and now you have a movie about your lives as rock stars.
Guess, was this just before, because the Talking Heads did Stop Making Sense. I think that was in 89. I could be wrong. Listeners can correct us.
Yeah.
But they were revered for that one. Yeah. And it was basically just like a live performance, but it was directed by a big movie director. So yeah. It was kind of like, so it was like this clever stage production of it, but weird. And finally, on October 23rd, 1956, born on this day, Dale's favorite artist of all time forever.
Print. No. Why
no?
did I?
No. Dwight Yoakam!
Yay!
Dwight Yoakam, who would be... I'm bad at math. Old. Today. country singer. He is a very good actor as well. He was in the movie Sling Blade and a couple of other shows.
He was in the one with the Panic Room.
Yes. Yeah, he's just a very good actor. And a very funny guy. Whenever I... Stop injuring yourself. Whenever I see... him being interviewed or something, he's always very lighthearted. So, good on him being born.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday, Dwight Yoakam. Oh, and that has been This Week in Music History. Have a musically historical week.
This week on the charts, we are looking at rock without CanCon. What do I mean by that? Basically, we're looking at the heritage rock charts in the U.S., in Canada, for the radio charts, radio rock charts. On BDS, we have rock, we have modern rock, and we have mainstream rock. Mainstream rock chart is basically the equivalent to the heritage rock chart in the U.S. The definition of this kind of chart, or this kind of rock, is... rock stations that are between classic rock and active rock on the programming spectrum, and that they play more classic rock focusing in on the 70s, 80s, and 90s than active rock stations, but play more current and newer rock than classic rock stations. So basically it's a successor to the widespread album-oriented rock format created in the 70s, which doesn't really exist now. So basically, I thought it'd be interesting to take a look at the heritage rock charts in the U.S. because then we're going to get an idea of what rock looks like without CanCon because we all know American radio doesn't have to play anything Canadian. So I'm not going to read. They have about 25 songs on the heritage rock chart. I'll give you about the top 10. And then maybe we can list it within the show notes. Then you'll get a neat idea. It's very... When you go into the States, and if you listen to rock radio there... you'll notice it's very heavy, and they have a very specific sound. So starting at number one, you have Avenged Sevenfold. At number two, oh, look at this, we have 3 Days Grace. So rock without CanCon, meaning they don't have the CanCon rules, but there you go, 3 Days Grace does well in the States. Number three, Korn. Number four, Pop Evil. Number five, Papa Roach. Number six, Imagine Dragons. Number seven, Alice in Chains. Number eight, Five Finger Death Punch. Oh dear. Number nine, Stone Sour. And number 10, Pearl Jam. And it's interesting to see number 11 is another Five Finger Death Punch song. So there is a look at the, I guess, top 11, because I read the Five Finger Death Punch at number 11. So the top 11 heritage rock songs in the U.S. with a appearance from a Canadian band. So that gives you an idea of what they're playing over there and what rock radio would look like without, Matt Mays or Sam Roberts or Monster Truck or the Sheepdogs or Crash Karma or any of that kind of stuff. So it really makes you, you know, appreciate being Canadian and the fact that we have the CanCon rules, because not only do you get some of this pretty cool rock, you have the Canadian rock that a lot of the Americans are missing out on. So I'm very thankful for rock radio and I'm very thankful for CanCon. So, there you go. Rock without CanCon.
Hi, everyone. So, this week for the Campus Report, I thought it would be fun to just look at a few names that stuck out. Because really, you know, what is in a name? So, a few that I found all along the charts. Actually, most of them came from Montreal, which is very interesting. So the first was a band called the Galaxious Mons, so from Montreal, and everything was done on a synthesizer on their album. I don't know if anyone's heard it, but check it out. There's also a band from Montreal called Aurora, But I kind of like the way that they spell it, because instead of A-U-R, they spell it with a capital A, and then Roar, and then another A. It's cute. And their album is called In the Pines. And here's a funny little thing that I was looking at about them. I went to their website, and I was looking at their shows, and they have a show in Toronto at the Dakota Tavern, but it's listed as Toronto, Texas. I just thought that was pretty funny. So maybe you should check to make sure that everything on your website, if you're a musician, is the right province or country. Considering also they're from Montreal, they should know these things. Moving on, there is a girl named Basia Blatt. She's actually from Toronto, and she's a folk artist. And her album is called Tall, Tall Shadows. And she's quite high on a few charts this week. Back to Montreal, there is another band called Mozart's Sister. And their album is called Hello, and they are described as dirt pop. And then finally, another band from Montreal, they're called Land of Kush. And the album is called The Big Mango. And the guy actually lives in Montreal, but I guess his family is Egyptian. So it's inspired by the sounds of Cairo, and it's very ambient and has Eastern influences. And Brazil. Rue, help me with this, because I think that it's a Brazilian term. Tropicalia?
Tropicalia.
Tropicalia. Yeah. That's how they describe their album. So there you go. Five interesting names. All Canadian. All from Montreal, except for one, but ripping up the charts on lots of them this week. Have fun!
This week, we have a new single from Saskatchewan country artist, Jess Moskaluk.
Oh,
Jess Moskaluk, what are you doing here?
I thought I was actually supposed to come and intro my new single.
Well, I didn't get the memo from Rue, but you know what? It's your single, so why don't you introduce it?
Cool, thanks, Amber. This is my new single, Good Lovin', off my upcoming album, Light Up the Night.
There's a 2-for-1 special on candles at the 5 and Dime. We can drown our troubles in the bubbles of some Boone's Farm wine. Johnny's the only cash we'll need. A little more light in a summertime breeze.
was Jess Moskaluk with Good Lovin', which means with music over, it's now time for part two of the podcast. And for part two, we are going to be talking about things that indie musicians may think aren't all that important, but actually are. Now, to compare that, there are certain things that are important. Everybody knows they're important, whether or not you do them. So going on tour, social media, having a good producer, wearing clothes on stage.
That's always
not,
that's
not always. Sometimes a sock is fine. But
a la Anthony Kiedis,
exactly. But looking at, we sort of broke it down to five things that we've actually experienced in our lives
recently.
They're so simple you might forget them.
Exactly. So these are important even if you're poo-pooing them. So get a notepad, write all these ideas down, and think to yourself, maybe I should focus a bit of time on these. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start with biography, also known as bios. Some people put them in the About Us section of their Facebook, but essentially a band description.
And it's funny how many people don't.
Yeah,
actually.
Exactly.
And the first place that I go now mm-hmm. is to someone's Facebook page and to find it in that About Us section. And when mm-hmm. they don't have it, it bothers me.
Yeah, and I find the same if I'm doing one of the podcasts, for instance, for Pinball Sessions, and I'm talking about one of the artists we're featuring. Sometimes it's really hard to find any kind of biographical information, what city they're from, how they formed, anything like that. So why is it important?
Well, and it's fun. It's cool that you asked that. And then it's also, there's people that will have a bio, but not really care what it says or how much information is in it or how much of it's BS or what part of it's flowery and which of it's just straight up fact.
Yeah.
So
it's really important that it's current.
Yes. So It's like Rue said, what are the main things you're looking for when you look up a band or an artist online? Where they're from. Mm-hmm.
Band members.
How long they've been around. Mm-hmm. How many people are in the band. You know, a description of what they sound like.
Which can be an artist meets artist. There's a lot of people that are afraid of, we're the Beatles meets Led Zeppelin. Or we are Capital Cities meets Lord or something like that. Because they feel like it's cheesy, but it gives people a really good sort of point, like a variation to look at and think, okay, that these are at least their influences. Yeah.
And what have you accomplished? Mm-hmm. Who have you played with? And
where have you toured?
What's happening? Yeah, where have you toured and what's happening right now? And do you have music and where can I find it?
So essentially you're talking about there are five W's that we're sort of looking at there.
Who, what, where, when, why, and, oh, and how.
And how. How is important too. But if you think of what people talk about for writing, say, in journalism or whatever, it applies to bio just in a sort of smaller scale.
Exactly.
There are going to be varying schools of thought about whether you should be flowery, which I am against, but other people, they have no problem
with. So avoid words like life-changing and...
Yeah,
epic.
telling somebody how they should feel about your music or how they do feel about your music, I find doesn't really work as well. So to tell somebody this is the best band you'll ever hear or your favorite band, stuff like that, that kind of stuff kind of stands out. It seems a little odd.
So all in all, if you're going to have your musician pages out there online or you're going to be submitting your music to places, you have to have a bio or something, whether it's a paragraph or you know, three paragraphs, don't go over
that.
Keep it simple and educate people about who you are and do it in a short amount of words.
Mm-hmm. We've actually, I think we've got at least one blog about bio writing, but it seems to be a good standard is a quick synopsis of the band in a first paragraph. That's sort of like a who, what, when kind of thing. Mm-hmm. A quick description of how the music sounds and maybe a recent project, and then sort of a closing paragraph that says what you're up to, going on tour, new album coming out, anything like that. So people can get it at a glance. So that is biography.
Number two.
Yeah.
Accessibility. So two things that can go with accessibility. We're talking about music streaming and or promo copies.
Mm-hmm.
So Rue has always said, have your music online for free. I mean, that's the first place that we go to try to hear something. But especially if you're an artist and let's say you want to book a tour.
Yeah.
And you need to send either promo copies or send a link to your album stream to the promoter. If you want someone to write a review on you, you need to either send them promo copies or send a stream to a promoter. So if really to be more cost effective, you should have a stream, a Bandcamp, I Love, or SoundCloud.
Yes.
And to give you one example, we had an artist that refused to send us a CD until we listened to the music online, only to find out that it was 30-second clips of a few songs online. Finally got the CD. We listened to it and had a nice conversation and, you know, decided that we weren't going to work with this particular artist. And then the artist demanded that we send this, mail the CD back to them.
We're not going to do that.
So if you're going to be, you know, making promo copies and stuff like that, make a budget for it.
Yeah. Because
you
need to have expense. It,
but that those CDs need to stay with the people they go to. What happens with them after that is not important, because you never know. It can fall into someone else's desk. They may have it down the road and go and hear your name again. So just, you know, it's important to have that stuff because it's visible and it's, you know, it's physical. And then talking with streaming as well.
Yeah, streaming is important because you don't want people to jump through hoops to have to listen to your music. So having it on YouTube is one possibility. Take the album cover or a video of yourself walking around and put the music behind it. But it's much better to go the route of a Bandcamp and a SoundCloud. And a lot of blogs will discover your music and will only accept it for something they'll write a review about if they can embed a SoundCloud or a Bandcamp on their blog as well. So it's a good idea to have those available. And you should never be worried about somebody stealing your music. If they do steal it, they have to go through a bit of a few steps to do so. And it just means that they have your music. I mean, especially when you're starting out, don't worry about selling it. Worry about reaching people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then now moving to number three of the ever so important things you should be paying attention to.
Mm-hmm.
We have
aesthetics.
Aesthetics. So meaning, you know, your images of you as the musician, band, what have you, what you put out visually online. So whether that's artwork for your album or your singles. It's also your image.
Your clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody's calling right now.
Hello,
with a question.
With a question about... Okay.
So, and also your image in general.
Yeah.
Your physical image, what you wear and how you present yourself
and also
on stage.
Exactly. How I think your stage banter image and also your personality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's part of your image. When you approach someone, when you're speaking to someone who's interviewing you, when you're speaking with someone who is a potential business contact for you, you obviously want to come off as intelligent.
Or you want to match what you are as a musician. So if you're a metal band, then dress like a metal band. That's fine. Or if you're a pop artist, you know, the image needs to match what you're putting out there.
Yeah.
We've had a few, and to use a couple examples, we've had a couple of rock bands that came our way. And you'll see the lead singer will be dressed up with some leather and like looking very rock starish with sunglasses. The rest of the guys look like they came in from work.
Yeah.
It needs to be cohesive.
It needs to be...
They're just knocking down the doors here.
There needs to be, one cohesive image going on throughout, whether it's you as a single person or a group.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we mentioned was images as in promo shots.
Promo shots,
I was talking to an agent who was saying how important that she will actually turn down clients or potential artists based on the images, the promo shots that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because when part of her job as an agent is to go to certain conferences and they will have like a one sheet or a postcard sort of thing with the bio and a photo of the group. And that photo has to give the first impression to the, I guess, talent buyer or whatever.
Yeah.
That is the first impression they have. So if you're a folk group and you're all dressed in leather and have mohawks, they're going to be like, this doesn't work.
And also, it's important because if you get on someone else's bill and you're on a poster, you need a good picture of yourself that's going to be all over town and all over.
So just online. Keep in mind having professional shots and make sure they represent you perfectly, and they have to be good. I just can't, the amount of crappy shots you've got,
it sounds superficial, but you have to think if you want to take this step, we're talking about trying to get to a certain point, and that is you want to have an agent. You want to.
It's like being an actor.
It's like
you have your resume and you have your headshot.
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't, you don't have to, like, it's a good idea to hire a professional, but if you can just get a good shot that shows who you are, then that's perfectly acceptable till somebody comes in and maybe throws you some money to get better pictures. Mm-hmm. But it should be something you're conscious of.
Exactly. Yeah. Just be conscious of it. Don't be cliche. But in the same breath, if you're a folk group, you probably should have a picture of a guitar or a violin in there somewhere. And some, I don't know.
Strombellas are actually a good example. They keep on sort of upgrading their sort of the styles of their pictures. And our most recent promo picture is all six of them standing on a dock, like one of those little square docks in the middle of the water. And there's a dog on the dock, and a dog sort of at one end, and it's kind of tipping the dock, and they're just standing there. Looks exactly what you'd expect from them.
Exactly. That wouldn't be Lamb of God's new album cover. Exactly.
No, you think that's a
Strombella. It'd also be appropriate for Great Lake swimmers.
Oh, totally. Especially if they were falling in.
Yeah. So just keep that in mind. The other thing, too, is Rue was saying to us earlier, single and album artwork.
Yes. It's very important because if you don't put an image in SoundCloud, Bandcamp, or any other kind of site, they will give you a generic filler, which is often like a gray box that says music in it, or like think of the Twitter egg if you don't actually put in your own profile picture. Mm-hmm. That is an immediate skip over. If I see that, I don't listen to it because not that I'm punishing them. It's that there's probably something with an image that will catch my attention first. Mm-hmm. So especially if you're looking to spread your music around, you're going to want to make sure there's some kind of graphic associated with it, just like you want to make sure you have a bio associated with the band so people know who you are.
And it's consistent with all of the images you put out there.
Yes.
So if your Facebook has a logo, you want the artwork to be on there, you want your artwork to be on Twitter, on your website. Mm-hmm. It needs to all be consistent, professional, represents you well.
Yes.
Because, and I know you wrote a blog recently, Rue, about how the artwork alone can... Mm-hmm. decide for somebody whether they'll click to listen on your music or not.
Because you're going to see it before you hear it nowadays.
Exactly. Yep. So it's kind of like going into a library and trying to pick a book.
Yes, exactly.
Judging a book by its cover, unfortunately, we do it. Some of us do, I guess.
I do it.
So number four, this one's sort of a quick one, but another one of those things that often gets glossed over, and that is song descriptions. Like on SoundCloud or Bandcamp, you can often put in a little description underneath the waveform. So you're telling people what the song's about, maybe what inspired you, maybe other musicians that played on the song. It's similar to like the liner notes you'd have in a CD, but song specific. Some people will just put, say, copyright in their name, but it's a good opportunity to give people more information. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I will see a song title that catches my eye. I'll see a picture that's really neat, and it's a song description. It sells me on it because I just glance it, and it gives me some really cool insight into the song or the band.
Also, if you're uploading the CD to Grace Notes on iTunes, make sure that you have the title there so we don't see track one, track two, and then have that's to so figure out what their song is actually called by listening to the lyrics. And if your song is on YouTube and your song has been in a movie or in a commercial, in your description or in your title, you write, as seen in.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Adeline did that. Most artists will put up a special version of the song on YouTube or something that says that. And it's a good idea because it's another selling point.
Yeah, exactly.
And the people who saw the show may search for it that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's Adeline got a huge number of hits that
huge
way.
Number. Mm. And finally, a
kind of an odd one, but not so odd.
Not so odd. It is website. Now, why is it here, perchance?
Because everyone has a website.
Yeah.
But there are the non-believers.
There are non-believers that say you have your Twitter, your Facebook, maybe just get a Tumblr, have a YouTube, and you're done. You don't need a website because it's all covered through all these other social media. But that's false. And I've actually seen people say the death of the website, the death of the homepage, but it's a good idea. In fact, we'd say it's an important idea, as per this episode, to have a website, because the website is your hub, and it's where you'll want to send people, and they can leave from there to look at your tour dates, to look at your Twitter, to look at your YouTube. But it's a good idea to have a home base that you control yourself. There are great website hosters out there where essentially they own it. You're getting it for free. Shell out a bit of money and do it yourself. Have it yourself on your own wall because it's something you own and they can't control it. And that way you can put up news in one specific place. You can sell stuff through a website, through e-commerce. It's a good idea to have a home for everything.
It's just when I'm Googling, I know, like a musician, I know I'll check out their social media a lot to do with, you know, to see the content and the numbers. Mm-hmm. But a main website is where you draw everything together. And it's a place where it's I'm going to have the Facebook, the Twitter, the YouTube links.
Make sure those links are there.
Yeah. Homepage. They're right there in the front. It would just be really cool to, you know, make sure that everyone still does that. You don't have to have 15 pages. Everything can be on one page. And we have music artists we work with that have that.
Yep.
You don't need to have a giant website.
They have one page, it links to everything else, and they have a little bio and a picture or two.
And it's one more link that when I go on Google and I type in Bobby Joe, the new artist,
I go Bobby Joe,
it's one more notch on the Google list of places where you are. That looks good.
It does.
If there's only two links to where you are, to you as a musician online.
And the rest are all references to Evil Dead.
Then, Bobby Joe, there you go. So, you know, it's little things to keep in mind that all affect you in a big way.
So. That's true. So there are 5 points you should write down right now.
Biography, accessibility, aesthetics, song descriptions, and website.
Now, of course, these aren't, there's more stuff that is important, but we just thought these were 5 that people don't consider important, but we do.
So do them.
Wow. That escalated quickly. And that has been Radio Dale number 43. My name is Rue.
I'm Amber.
I'm India.
I sound like a man.
My name's Amber. You can find Amber at dalespeaking.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Dale_speaking, Facebook, Dale Speaking, and we're everywhere else as Dale Speaking. Do we have any last thoughts?
We hope that we helped you with this podcast. Because with our part 2, like we said at the beginning of it, we've run into a few musicians that have had a couple of those things we mentioned missing or needed a little help on them. So hopefully we're able to provide you with a little bit of insight or whatever. Or you hate it.
Or you hated it. And let us know. We'd love to hear from you if you hate it. Or if you love it. Doesn't matter. We'd love to hear from you anyways. You can email us at radiodale@dalespeaking.com as well.
And if there's any topics you want us to talk about, questions,
concerns, like that, queries,
then just send them our way. We're happy to do them as a podcast.
Yay! So that has been number 43.
Out. This week we have new music from Jess Moskaluk and her new...
Hey, Amber...
Jess Moskaluk, what are you doing here?
I actually was going to introduce my new single.
Oh, I guess I'll let you do it then.
Oh, okay. This is my new single, Good Lovin', from my upcoming... Oh, shoot.
Shit! We're so good.
That was a good one.
We'll work your magic with editing. We'll try it again, but if the first one's better, we'll...
After you specifically were like, don't say upcoming, I was like, my upcoming!
Oh, shoot.